Show Me the Way podcast. Show Me the Way, episode 24, the family-owned two-step acquisition. In this episode, we talk with Gary Alexander about his life experiences, including his involvement with a very highly successful business and his process of selling that family-owned business. Welcome to Show Me the Way, a podcast presented by Spencer Fain LLP about business succession planning, the merger and acquisition experience, and successful exits. I'm your host, Dave Sider. Before we dive into today's captivating discussion, for any of you podcast listeners out there, I have a feeling you'll be interested in the upcoming BEI National Exit Planning Conference taking place this August in one of my favorite spots of the world, Denver, Colorado. And to top it off, I will be speaking along with an esteemed panel of top-notch M&A advisors, investment bankers, and financial advisors. Together, we will delve into the current landscape and latest trends we are seeing in the M&A marketplace. If you are eager to be part of this conversation, please mark your calendars and make sure to join us at BEI National Exit Planning Conference this August. Details are available at BEI.com. And with that, let's shift our focus back to the discussion at hand. Joining me today on today's show, I'm giggling a little bit because it's Gary Alexander. I've known Gary for a long time, a very good man. He is and was and continues to be the guiding light to his family and the family business that he held for so many years. Gary was the former owner of multiple companies, and he'll tell you a little bit about that some years ago. Gary is willing to share his secrets in what took him to success in growing his business on behalf of his ownership group, which was his family, and the ultimate exit for himself and the company. And I believe he'll share some thoughts and reflections on life after many years since the sale of his business. Gary, welcome to the show. Real pleasure. And I'm sure right now, Florida is a place to be in these United States, this time of the year, needless to say. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, David, my friend. And it's a gorgeous day here in Florida, so I'm happy to be here.
And I'm sure the golf is good down there as well. You're living the life of Riley, as they used to say in the day.
Yes, except when I played golf when I was younger, it didn't hurt so much.
Both physically and the wallet, I would imagine, sir.
No, mentally too.
Good call. Gary, give us a little bit of flavor of your background, where you grew up, your early business experiences. Where were you born?
I was born in Alton, Illinois.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Born in 1940. And of course, World War II broke out. And during that time, my dad went into the Army Air Corps. We moved around in Texas because, as many service people in Texas, I didn't get to go to kindergarten, but came back to Illinois and started grade school in Alton, then moved down to Harrisburg, Illinois, lived in Peoria, Illinois.
Wow.
Then made it back to Kansas City, which was really the family home for both my mother and my dad.
Wow. And is Alton, is that where is it Scott Air Force Base? Am I thinking
the right? It's close.
Okay.
It's close. That's, you know, probably 40, 50 miles away.
Okay.
Right on the Mississippi River. Elijah Lovejoy, okay, and the press that, you know, got thrown into the Mississippi River because he was for abolition of slavery.
Right. Right. The only person that knows, I think, more history than me is Gary. We're both history nuts, needless to say. So where did you go to college?
I went to a junior college, Kansas City, Missouri Junior College, because I didn't have money to go off to school. Lived at home for the first 2 years.
Yes.
And then I went to the great University of Kansas and enjoyed my time there greatly. I was an ancient history major. And even in high school, I went to Shawnee Mission High School when there was just one, the last graduating class where there was just one Shawnee Mission. And even back then, I thought about going into the ministry. So I majored in ancient history. And just in case at some point in my life, I decided to go into the ministry. I went through in 3.5 years. I'd gotten married between my sophomore year and my junior year. And then my wife and I had a child almost on our first anniversary. So I thought, I've got to get out of school and get a good job. So I was happy to get hired by Procter & Gamble, proud to be hired by such a good company, and worked in Kansas City. That was my first job.
Wow. Good for you. We know that you went on from being an employee to becoming a business owner. And there was a little bit of a, shall we say, a road traveled there. Can you share that with us as well?
Well, after I went to seminary, graduated after 3 years of seminary, there was 4 years in college, 3 years of seminary. I had a church, became an army chaplain. After I got out of the army, I got hired by a subsidiary of IBM and worked there for 4 years in Kansas City and Chicago, and got great training there. Loved the training from IBM, went through a year's worth of training, which was wonderful. And then my subsidiary got given to Control Data Corporation as the settlement for a dissent decree lawsuit. So I got, because I'd had a pretty good career in sales, I had 8 job offers in the next 2 weeks. Got a job offer from Telex Corporation out of Tulsa, but they offered me a job in Chicago. But I said, I heard there's a job opening in Kansas City. So I got back to Kansas City, which is where I wanted to be. Got to Telex. They had a lot of cash problems, and that made it difficult to work for them. So the person that had worked in the job I had before me had gone to Sperry Corporation. So he had contacted me, said, when you're tired of Telex and them not keeping their commitments, come talk to Sperry. So I went to Sperry, got hired by Sperry, and I could not go back to work for IBM because there was a contingency that said you can't go back to work for IBM. So I went to work for Sperry, got into the mainframe business, and was very happy to have that. Meanwhile, like 3 years later into my career at Sperry, IBM called up and said, okay, we got that overturned. We want you to come back to IBM. But I said,
that I didn't know.
Yeah, too late. So far down the path with Sperry that I'm not going to make that change. So I was happy and honored that they were nice enough to call me. In fact, I remember the guy's name that called me, Gene Promozek from Chicago. But anyway, stayed at Sperry. I was a salesman there. I became the sales manager, became the branch manager. And because I was a fairly aggressive businessman, my branch was the number one branch in the country for Sperry 2 years in a row. I got promoted then to go up to the last place in the world I wanted to go, with New York City. I turned down Atlanta. I turned down Houston because I had children by a previous marriage that lived in the Kansas City area. And I didn't really want to leave them. But finally, they put a gun to my head and said, you're going to take this promotion or your history. So since I needed a job, off I went to New York City and lived in New Canaan, Connecticut. That was an interesting experience.
And you matriculated back to Kansas City and at some point started a little company known as?
Alexander Open Systems, AOS. AOS is how most people knew it. So I had always read in books, don't ever put your name on a company because if it fails, that stigma never goes away. But being me, I said, I'm going to put a stake in the ground and we're going to win the battle.
By God.
Yeah, come hell or high water. Because at one point, I had all 5 of my sons in the business. One didn't work out pretty early on. He lasted maybe 4 or 5 months. But the rest of them, the other 4, were in there for almost the whole time that I owned the company. And then we owned the company because my wife and I gifted out ownership over the years, and we owned that company for 25 years. So,
yes,
good experience.
What did Alexander Open Systems do? The folks would like to know.
We were a computer networking company, highly focused on Cisco products. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I knew was a little guy like me was not going to have a brand name like Cisco or Microsoft or IBM. I was going to have to ride on other people's coattails when it came to market awareness. So I focused on name brands, mainly Cisco, but also Microsoft, HP, EMC, you know, other big name companies that our customers would recognize the name. So I didn't have to sell them on the products that we sold. We sold best of brand products, but we built a great service organization and had a guarantee that if you're not happy with our service, tell us why you're not happy. Give us 30 days to remediate that problem. And if in that 30 days we don't have it remediated, then we'll give you your money back. Never had to give a nickel back because Wow. We had great people. We trained our people tremendously well. We paid our people very, very well. So we had a great service team that I was 100% confident of and proud of.
Was that your underlying secret for the business, or was that in combination with other things that you did? Tell us a little bit about your philosophy.
Well, I mean, number one, I wanted to sell absolutely the best products.
Right.
We named it Alexander Open Systems because I didn't want proprietary products where you had to have that brand only, or the operating system wouldn't accept the workability of the product. So we would sell products that you could buy best of breed from many different companies, but they would all interface together. I wanted to make sure that we had great service people so we could guarantee our service. My sons and I all agreed that when we started our company, we would run it on Christian principles and have the highest ethics and the highest morality that we can, because that leads to a good reputation, and everybody's always looking for a good reputation. So we did have, you know, great products, great service, great ethics, and I was very aggressive. I love taking risks, and was the difference between me and my son. My sons weren't much of risk takers, but I was a big risk taker. And we, after a number of years of establishing ourselves, we started buying other companies. Then at some point in time, when I thought we were pretty good at it, we started starting our own companies in new geographies. The art of war always said, don't stretch your lines of communication, you know, so right. that you can have reinforcements, you know, nearby. So I would never start another company that was more than 2.5 hours away from the next company. So we would always step out, one step away. But we ended up with business from North Dakota down to Texas. The main areas were Kansas City, Omaha, St. Louis, Springfield, Missouri. Did a decent amount of business in Oklahoma, some in Little Rock, some in Dallas. Up in Sioux Falls, we were strong. We were strong in Des Moines. So we were a Western Midwest company, and that was part of the strategy. We focused on areas that the large companies ignored. So they were underserved markets. So it gave us a unique opportunity. And, you know, I knew it was paying off when we became larger in that particular swath of geography, larger than AT&T, and selling, you know, networking products. Yeah.
What is it like running a family business? Because you've been involved with very big business. You have a unique perspective, very large businesses. And then you become an owner of a family business. How is that different? Or how is it, shall we say, they'll have different challenges or issues than working for people, frankly, you don't know very well?
Right. Well, you know, contrast it. My division at Unisys, I was president of two different divisions. Right. The first one was 3,000 people and a little bit less than $1 billion in revenue. You know, and then I come in to running a family business. That's completely different. You're not going to fire your sons.
Right. Right. Right.
You're also going to give your sons responsibilities without them having to work through the ranks. Fortunately, I had sons that were really good guys, really smart, technically more interested in technology and good at technology than I ever wanted to be or hoped to be. So that worked out well. The difference was that they didn't have the business experience and they weren't really risk takers. So from a business experience, they were one of the things I would always say to them is that it's great to get the sale, but don't get too excited about it. It's only after you've made the sale and you've made a good profit on it that you say, okay, that was a good sale. If you lose money on it, obviously it's a bad sale.
Right.
I also told them from a management point of view that they had to be 100% consistent and not have favorites and try to make very simple decisions. That my experience is that we don't do a very good job of playing God because we don't have that wisdom and that omniscience. So anyway, I said, you know, make straightforward business decisions quickly and honestly and fairly, and then move on. But you're never going to be God, so don't even try to be.
Oh, that's excellent advice. And plus, if you're honest and straightforward, you don't have to think about what you did right or wrong. It's just pretty much going right down there.
We always broke our back to be honest and fair and never lie. So, you know, one of the things that, you know, once you've lied to somebody, you can hardly ever regain their trust. So we just, you know, told the truth as attractively as we could, but we were always very straightforward, maybe a little too straightforward sometimes.
I don't know if the truth hurts you.
Sometimes it does. Sometimes people don't want to know the truth.
So at some point through the process, you're retired now. At some point, you started down the road of selling your business. Let's talk a little bit about succession planning. Did you go through an analysis whether or not you were going to sell your business to your sons, or was it always going to be a third party?
I don't think I ever would have sold my business to my sons. We gave 20% over a period. Originally, I told them they were going to get given 5% after they proved they, you know, were going to work hard and understood the business and wanted to be in the business.
Right.
Over a period of time, my wife and I agreed and decided to gift out 20% to each of the sons, which would give us, you know, the remaining 20%. And in 1992, when I was 60, I was going to turn 62, I told everybody I was going to retire and I was going to turn the company over to my sons. Well, then, that was really in 2002.
Oh, so two, right.
Not 2002. 92 is when I started the company.
Right.
So the dot-com bust came in. I was worth maybe a little less than $5 million personally. I had to sell all of my stock, pay taxes, put up my house, everything I had, and probably even more than I had to save the company. And my kids didn't really have enough money to really help much. And they, you know, at that point in time, they weren't going to give up a nickel of the small amount of money that they had put into savings. So it was a very risky business. But at that time, I was hoping to turn the business over to my sons. And maybe I'd keep 20% interest and use that as my retirement. But it became apparent that it really wasn't going to work from a family dynamics point of view to have my sons run the company or have one son be the CEO and the others report to that one son. They weren't going to do that. I was told clearly by my sons they were not going to report to another brother.
Right.
So I tried to turn it over to my CFO, who was a guy that you know and a really good guy.
Right.
Very smart. But he was not a good CEO. He was a great CFO. But in that process, somebody had called up and wanted to talk to me about selling the company. And, you know, I didn't have the company for sale. And you remember this because this guy basically was going to use our money, Alexander's money, to buy the company, a leveraged buyout.
Right.
He would have given us half of the money up front. And then, he, you know, when he sold the company 5 years later, then we'd get the other half. Well, I learned pretty quickly that I'd probably never, ever see the other half of that money. My sons wanted to do it. My CFO wanted to do the deal. And I said, it isn't going to happen. I don't trust this guy. You know, so we finally shut that deal down. And my son, nor my CFO were very happy about that. But I was confident that that was a bad decision. But that really was the impetus for me to start seriously thinking about selling the company. A friend of mine up in Michigan had a company like mine. He had hired an investment banking company that he highly recommended, and their fee was less than most other companies wanted. So I liked that. They had gone through the experience of selling his company, which was very much like my company. So they understood the business to a large extent, and they had had a very successful sale. I already had, you know, Spencer Fain as my law firm, and you had all of my history from,
right,
you know, forever. So I certainly was going to use Spencer Fain. I had a good accounting company in BKD.
Right.
So, you know, I had a good mid-market accounting company that people could look at and trust the numbers from. It wasn't mm-hmm. just some little accountant in some home office. And then the M&A lawyer out of Michigan that my friend had used, who was a specialist and had helped make the sale of his company, we added on to Spencer Fain, and that formed our team.
Right.
And it was about a 4-year process, but with quality of earnings studies with McLadry, you know, and all the other things we had to go through to get all the history done. It was, for the last 2 years, a fairly intense process, as you know, because you were involved in it. And, you know, we finally got it done. I did bring in a guy from the outside to be CEO. Candidly, he was more talk than he was action. He sounded good, but he wasn't good, but he was good enough, you know, to be the face, and the company that bought our company, you know, thought he was really good. So it's like, praise God, you got him. But one of the things that he did do, I had told him in confidence how much I wanted for the company. He turns around and tells them, this is how much Gary wants for the company. So big surprise. That's what they offered. And I said no, because I was pissed off that confidence. And so, you know, ended up getting a few million dollars more out of them. We, you know, had to wait 4 months, but they really wanted our company.
Right.
And our company was a great company. They had bought a lot of companies, and they have bought other yeah. companies since then. I don't think they've ever made an acquisition as good as AOS, because we had a terrific company. I don't think they did a particularly good job with it after they got us. But anyway, I told them, it's got to be all cash. You know, I'm not going to do any consulting. When, you know, when we sign the piece of paper and the checks in the bank, you know, I'm off to retirement, because I was 77 by the time we got around for selling the company. So I wasn't selfish. It was just like, I want to get on with life.
Right.
Very good. And candidly, you know, I didn't want to try to help run a company that I was used to saying, here's what we're going to do, and it got done, you know, to somebody that was probably not going to really care what I said. So anyway, sold the company. We got a decent amount of money. The multiple was good. I was happy with the deal, you know, and I've enjoyed a good life, you know, since then.
What has retirement been like for you? Because I've seen over the years with some businessmen, it's a real struggle, because you go from that go, 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 I'm the man, I'm in charge, to, you know, as in your case, you know, you leave Kansas City, you go to Florida. Now you had been had a second home in Florida, so you were pretty right. used to that. You know, how did you make that transition, Gary?
It was a breeze.
Good for you.
Absolutely a breeze. I had a good marriage.
Right.
You know, so I had time to spend with a wife that I really cared for, that I candidly had not spent the time that I would have liked to have spent with her, and ignored her because I worked so hard and I was I took so darn many risks, and I was traveling all the time. So it was good. You know, I got into playing golf. I got sucked into being on the board of a condo. Then I got on the board of a country club. And this country club, it's like a full-time job. Mm-hmm. So I've been very active down here. I've gotten to get a lot of exercise, a lot of fresh air. So I've loved every minute of it. I get to read a lot. It's been a good life.
There is a light at the end of the tunnel, and it's a warm and happy and illustrious type of existence that you live. That's great.
Well, it was for me, but you know, Dave, as you know, you and I have philosophical talks. Oftentimes it's what you decide. It's what you
yes.
make it. I decided to make it a great life.
Yep.
I've loved it.
Yep.
You know, on the wall of the gymnasium I had at AOS in Overland Park, it said an attitude of gratitude.
Right.
You know, I've always had that attitude. We got involved in some really good charities like Special Ops Warrior Foundation and had enough money that we could give them $100,000 a year and some other charities that we got involved in. So I loved being in a position to give back to society and to enjoy my family. And I've traveled a lot too. COVID didn't help that, but other than that, it's been really good.
Outstanding. That is so wonderful. It warms my heart to hear that. You have profited personally, and I mean not in a monetary sense, although you did profit from that, but you profited from a life experience through the retirement. Congratulations. You've done.
Yes.
I can share with you, there's some people who struggle with it. I'm so happy for you it's worked out that way. You know, what I learned from you, and correct me if I'm not seeing this the right way, what I learned from you is the first offer is not always the best offer you get on the sale of the business.
Oh, my God. Thank God I didn't do it. I'm fortunate that I had enough business experience and enough intuition to say, this guy's got empty pockets, although he's talking big. You know, so thank God we didn't do that.
Well, and so the lesson learned is, I remember going through this and analyzing this at the end of the day, you know, the first offer is not always the best offer. And sometimes it just awakens you. And I think it awakened you, as you said, to say,
yes,
let's really be serious about that. So looking back now, you've seen other people sell their businesses. When you were going through that process, were you looking around to see how other people did it as a baseline for determining how Gary should go forward? Or was that not the case?
It wasn't really the case, but I felt like I'd been careful enough with business associations that I had quality people that we had already chosen, like Spencer Fain, like BKD, and then the experience that my friend had with this investment banking company and with this other M&A lawyer, that I had a good team.
Yep.
You know, and like everything else in life, if you've got a good team around you, you've got a decent, you know, chance of winning. If you think you can do it all by yourself, it probably isn't going to turn out too well, because there's things that we just don't know, and we don't know that we don't know them. But with a team like we had and the guidance that we had from everybody, then, you know, there were some things that happened that I wasn't happy with, doing quality of earnings twice at $100,000
right.
a pop.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't happy with that, but that's, you know, you do what you have to do to get the
right.
deal done.
Right. At the end of the day, based upon your experience, what are your two or three, shall we say, crystal points of advice for people who think they're interested in transitioning their business, that is selling their business?
Well, I do think getting that team assembled mm-hmm. early and knowing that it's going to take a long time.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. It doesn't happen fast. Not if it's a really big deal.
Right.
All right. So, you know, you're going to have to go through a lot of paperwork, you know, a lot of studies, a lot of analysis, a lot of legal things. You know, the investment banking company that I worked with had told me about a 338H, which, you know, was a great deal for the buyer, because they can write it off over 15 years, or at least that's the law 5 years ago.
Right, right.
So it was an asset sale. They could handle it as an asset sale. So anyway, it was, you know, just having really good people around, because you haven't done it before. And it's a once in a lifetime opportunity, usually, once you're going to do this and you don't get a mulligan for it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So you want people that have done it before, that know where the traps are and can give you good advice and say, this is what you have to do. This doesn't mean, I can remember my investment banking company saying, oh, you can't ask for this on some deal, you know, some financial thing. And I said, no, I can and I will. And I said, I can't even remember what it was, but I said, I want $125,000 for this. And the investment banking company said they'll never agree to it. They said, okay.
Yep.
So every once in a while, you got to use your own judgment right. To say, yeah, this is right. And right. I'm going to ask for it.
It's your company at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's your money.
It's your money.
You're paying everybody else. Everybody else is getting their cut.
That's right.
That you've earned.
Yeah. So I think I'm going to ask for what I want.
Yeah, I'm the boss. I get to say what's happening. You guys get to do your part and get your honest piece of the pie. But you got to be involved.
Well, Gary, thanks a lot. This is really very great, insightful. I called this the two-step, because you had to go through two steps to get to the goal line. Not everybody does it. Some people come in, they sell it right away. Some come in, they try to sell it. They don't get it sold. They go down a different road. But
right.
in such a close period of time, that was unique. But thanks for telling us your story and your successes and the family. Your experience, while a little bit unique, is probably what most of the businesses are like in this country. Being family owned, being closely held. And at some point, as we all know, all businesses get sold. There is no luggage rack on the hearse.
Right.
So it's going to go on to somebody else. You're in good health. You're living the life of Riley. Congratulations.
Yeah. And I guess one last thing is,
please.
My sons trusted me.
Yes.
Okay. And even though they might not agree with me, they trusted my judgment to say, you're the one that got us here.
Mm-hmm.
You're the one that's going to get us across the line. So whatever, you know, ultimately, whatever you say, that's what we're going to do. We'll say our 2 cents worth, but they trusted me to carry the ball and get it across the goal line. And it worked out for all of us. And it's even better now. My sons and I are closer, you know, now than we ever have been. So I feel so blessed.
God love you. You deserve it, sir.
God is justice.
Yes. So I want to thank Gary, and I know that there'll be a lot of conversations from the listeners out there. So thanks again, Gary, for spending time with us. It is much appreciated.
Thank you, my friend, David.
If you are in search of assistance, please go to davidsider.com and schedule a free consultation. Also, please make sure to subscribe to the show, rate it, and leave me a comment on your favorite podcast platform, such as Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Until next time, thanks all. This podcast is scheduled for educational purposes. It does not constitute legal advice and is not intended to establish an attorney-client relationship. The recommendations contained in this podcast are not necessarily appropriate for every individual or business. In determining the best course of action, business owners should consult with an attorney on their distinct circumstances.